Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Bill Janoschak on a special edition of the Conquering Stress podcast. This is awesome. And so I haven't done the thumbnail yet, but I was thinking about putting the clickbait out over here about how the orthopedic surgeon and the chiropractors are fighting it out and just see if you guys can get on. But I didn't want to get too cheesy just yet because this is actually a very exciting. Where are we at? Well, it's not so exciting because I can't get us back to back. There we go. But it's actually exciting. So we have Dr. Haoya Wu. Is that pronounced right?
Haoya.
How are you doing? How are you doing, Wu? Who's an orthopedic surgeon who came, dropped by the office just to say hi. We're neighbors over here in Yorba Linda. As we're getting through, and as we started to talk, you know, I talked to a lot of, you know, orthos, neuros, other docs to just to kind of see what's going on. So we refer patients back and forth. We all differently. But I actually found you amazing because it's not only a clinical aspect of this, but it's well, you know what? I'm going to let you talk on it. Let me give a little bit of background for you. So you started out at USC.
Yep.
You went to you're in Pennsylvania.
University of Penn. University of Pennsylvania.
University of Penn over there. You finished up over the spine fellow at Harvard.
Yeah.
You have over 50 academic papers written. You should be about 70 years old just by those things already. but on top of that, you're really involved in your profession for the health of your profession, not just academically, but you really got into the developmental side of that. And that's kind of why we're here, because we've not only, you know, we see patients with physical ailments, but in both our professions and just kind of the public in general, we're seeing a lack of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of burnout. And just like this podcast is Conquering Stress. You know what? We had a great conversation right before we came on here. Tell us your story. Tell us what you... So Dr. Haoya Wu has...
Haoya. Yeah, it's all good. You know what? You can call me Howie. You know what?
I'm going to call you Dave or Charlie or,
no, anything for
or
you,
Homeboy.
Or, Homeboy works
too. With respect, because like I said, I'm very impressed with everything that you've done, not just as a doctor, but as a human being.
Thank you.
But what's the name of the book that you're doing, this part of the series?
Yes. So the name of the book, and Bill, thank you so much for having me on this.
It's my pleasure.
Great privilege to be on here. It's called Unlocking the Leader Within. Unlocking the Leader Within. And the reason why we, you know, started with this book, and this has been a project I've been working on since 2019, since I was a resident out at UCSF, is exactly the reasons why you had mentioned earlier. We were seeing that a lot of the people, you know, that I was training with, a lot of students that I was teaching, they had a lot of issues dealing with stress. And that's why I, you know, really enjoyed listening to your podcast and some of your earlier episodes, the different guests that you've brought on to bring perspectives to that. Because if you think about a population that's perhaps the most overburdened, medical students, out of any type of training, probably fits the bill as the most stressed out. So there's been survey after survey that have shown that at least 50% of medical students suffer from some type of burnout. And usually those burnout symptoms last long-term. They can last through residency. They last through when they're physicians. A lot of them quit, you know, either in med school, they quit when they're, you know, they're training. I actually had a close friend who I knew back in high school. He was at Penn with me. He unfortunately committed suicide during med school.
Wow.
And it was really, really sad. So I saw a lot of those things coming through training. And the thing that it was hard for me to reconcile was, you know, I saw a lot of the stress of going through training, and I felt a lot of that myself. But also, I love what I do. Like, you know, Bill, the reason why this is really cool that we get to do this is I'm a spine surgeon, you're a chiropractor, we see a lot of the same patients. I think at the end of the day, you and I, one of the reasons why I thought we connected so well when we spoke is that you have like a real genuine passion for patient care. I feel the exact same way. I love seeing patients. I love what I do. But my question that I was trying to answer back in 2019 is what tools have I employed that allowed me to continue seeing joy in my profession? And then what actual skills can I pass on to those medical students and other residents who I mentor? So the answer to that was through leadership. So in 2019, I was a judge for a competition called Clinical Key Global Challenge, which was an international competition for medical students, where we selected the top 12 medical students from around the world. We brought them to London to do a escape room type of activity. And we formed them into teams. And then the team that did the best on escape room activities and showed the most collaboration was the team that won. But what was actually born out of that competition was we saw that the students, they knew the clinical stuff. And this was among all cultures. We had folks from India. We had folks from Europe. We had folks from Mexico and the US. But across the board, what was lacking was a training in leadership, training in emotional intelligence, training on coping mechanisms for stressful situations. So from there, that's where we developed the idea to do a leadership book to introduce medical students and medical trainees to leadership and personal development skills that they can learn and internalize to get them through training.
Do they in medical school, do they touch on any of that? Like even at orientation, they're going to say, all right, you're going into the foxhole, you're going to be, you know, kind of, you're going to be beaten down and stressed out and be prepared. Here's some things that, I mean, just even if it's just low level stuff, like, you know, eat right and exercise. Don't forget to get some sleep the best you can. Take amphetamines or, you know, or whatever it is. Do they give you even any guidance, or is it just like, let's see who survives?
Most schools, no guidance whatsoever. The guidance that we get, and this is from research that I've done with a lot of different medical schools and a lot of different medical students from around the country. There are maybe one or two schools around the country that have formal leadership programs. I know there's one in Washington State, there's one at FIU, but most schools, they actually teach you how to master the patient relationship. Like all those things that you said about stress, it's how do you manage the stress of your patient? How do you manage the stress of breaking bad news to someone else? They don't tell you how to manage the stress of acquiring knowledge, applying your knowledge, handling, you know, different stressors, like how do you interact with nurses? How do you interact with different providers? You know, if you're the medical student, how do you talk to the attending? And how do you gain or accept feedback? All of that is part of the hidden curriculum that we have to learn on our own.
So when you were in London, was it more of a mastermind type style, or just in conversation that everybody said, hey, you know, we're smart. We got out of this escape room and we're better than you and we're really smart. But what I'm really struggling with is trying to balance my girlfriend, my academics, the boards. Was it through conversation? Was that just said, hey, these top level people are stressing out. Imagine what the people on the lower 30% are doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was part of the great thing about putting these folks into a team. Like imagine putting a group of the smartest people that you know in a room, and we gave them a puzzle and a clinical challenge to solve. So in order to solve the clinical puzzle, which is what they're used to in school, they had to also collaborate as a team of four to solve a puzzle challenge as well. So that was the part where we saw the most struggle, because at that point, all these really, really smart people, they're like, okay, how do I defer this task to someone else who I just met like a day ago? How do I ask for help? How do I move our team in the right direction when we're arguing? So the very interesting part about that escape room is actually that is what being in the hospital is like for us. Like when I'm in the operating room, a lot of times my team who I work with, a nurse might go for a break and it's a brand new nurse that comes in to work with me in the operating room. That's someone I've just met for the first time that day. And I have to learn very quickly how to gain swift trust and also how to navigate situations where if there's a disagreement or there's a communication imbalance, that I'm able to integrate that person into a team. So that's actually where those conversations came.
Wow. So just kind of some hard skills and stuff like that. So you're talking about how to avoid burnout as well as get those leadership skills.
Yep.
What are the stages that people go? When I talk to you about Coulter's work, because you're talking about how to get flow and what that does to the mind. Can you just kind of run through what like a Reader's Digest version or Cliff Notes version of the books, just so the listeners and the watchers kind of know what we're talking about?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the way that the book in general is structured is that there, the first two sections are on leadership skills that you can attain. The first section is called self-mastery. So there are skills that you can learn by yourself, about yourself, to allow yourself to be a better leader. And the reason why we titled the book Unlocking the Leader Within is that our philosophy is that it doesn't matter what stage you're training in. If you're a first year medical student, you can be a leader the same as if you're a fourth year or you're a last year resident. It's just a matter of your mentality and how you carry yourself. So self-mastery skills are things like emotional intelligence, effective communication, finding your why, avoiding burnout's a big one. And understanding those skills that are self-mastery allow you to then go into section two of our book, which is team skills. So these are things like conflict resolution, characteristics of an effective team, things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to build or navigate unless you're working in a team setting and you with a group of people are trying to achieve the same goal. And then the last bit part of our book, we basically show how you take the leadership principles from section one and section two and apply them to interviews, getting letters of recommendation, rotating effectively, taking care of patients effectively, and basically how to apply those in a effective setting. So you were talking about flow earlier. So actually, that's one of the topics I'm very interested in. And, you know, John Kotler, like you were saying, or sorry, Stephen Kotler, like you were saying, as a big pioneer of that work. One of the things that we discovered since 2019 is that we did a lot of reading and a lot of research into these principles. We realized that most of these principles applied mostly for folks in a business setting. So you think about business, it's 9 to 5. There's a, you know, the relationship between you as the employee or the boss, or maybe you're the boss and you have employees. But you, for the most part, you know the people that you're working with. You don't have to take call. One of the things that we struggle a lot as medical providers that we are always expected to be responsive. So if someone pages me right now and says, hey, my patient has an issue, I have to respond to them right away. Well, Stephen Kotler's work, one of his requirements for entering flow state was that you have to eliminate distraction, right? So that's very difficult if you're someone from a medical side and you're reading that and you're like, oh man, I'm supposed to eliminate distraction. I'm supposed to one of the things he says is try to find tasks that are just slightly a little bit more challenging than your skill level. But in medicine, like we are constantly doing things that are at or past our skill level because that's what we're forced to do to take care of others. Like every patient that comes in, and Bill, I'm sure you've seen it too. There's some patients that come in our door and we're like, wow, I've never seen that present itself. I'm going to try and help you the best I can, but it's not like you have all the answers right away. So we try to adapt that model that's been, you know, sort of really popular in the business world to medical professionals. So the model that we developed for flow state and how to attain flow were basically called the 3 M's of attaining the flow state: finding activities that you can be a master of, finding activities that matter, and finding activities that allow you to be in a mindful state where you're able to at least shield yourself from distractions as much as possible.
See, that's awesome. And, you know, the father of flow, since I'm butchering names today, I can't, you know, the it's the Polish dude, Mikhail is, I'll put it in the show notes, but the father, he was talking about, when I first saw that years ago, I'm like,
yeah.
Flo, I said, what is she talking about? I thought it was like a incontinence thing. And, but as it was going, going through, I'm like, that's when you're kind of living your purpose and you lose all sense of time. And that's psychological energy. And when I work with the patients, and the thing that I kind of do differently is, well, I'll bring in the chiropractic and neurology, the functional medicine, and then the mindset stuff, is because, you know, I find that the mind stuff, or the lack there, or the lack of EQ, or the stress at home, or that leads to the physiological stuff. That's the insomnia, the, you know, the trigger points and the back pain and the blown disc and the migraines and the ulcers and the immunity going to hell. And then, so we kind of got to encompass everything.
Yeah.
But when you're in your 3 M's,
yeah,
you kind of get a reset. And there's a portion of your book talking about the active rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, every once in a while I get this fantasy of, I want to sit my ass on the couch and want to just binge watch something stupid that I never get to see, because I don't watch a lot of TV. And I'm like, that would be cool. And in honesty, that would probably last a couple hours at most. And then I would start to get something, because I would be re-energized again. So it's, but getting back into purpose.
Yeah.
But like when you find those 3 M's and you're able to do that, have you seen a correlation with people's higher purpose in providing these, you know, these 3 M's?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's actually a part of our active research right now. I have a team of college students and a team of medical students that are looking at the correlation between people who are able to achieve flow state or have activities that they've deemed that allow them to achieve flow state and burnout, and also success in either applications to medical school or applications to residency. But at least from an anecdotal level, what I can say are those folks that can actually tell me or articulate exactly the activities they love to do if they had a free day. You know, like you said, hey, you know what? If you had a free day and you just want to sit down and watch TV, that's not a bad thing. If you want to watch TV or watch the newest show, there's a lot of great things out there on Netflix or, you know, Paramount, whatever it is, that's your choice. But when you when you're like a medical student or a trainee where you only have like maybe 3 hours in a day to just chill and really relax, how can you optimize that time so that when you're on call the next day or you have to take that test? You know, we have a lot of tests in medicine. I'm sure you had to deal with that same thing too, Bill. But like test after test, how do you recharge and recharge quickly? So, you know, for me personally, the activity that I do that hits all 3 M's is basketball, because that's an activity that I played growing up. I'm still reasonably good at it right now, where I can, you know, I can make a layup without thinking too much about it because I've done it for so long. I can play that with other people, so it's a social activity. There's a game that's usually with it, so it matters to me. So there's, you know, there's a score that's being kept. And then when I'm playing it, I'm not thinking about, you know, what's going on in the hospital, interactions that I had, or maybe moral injury that might have been caused by certain interactions I've had with other staff. I'm just in the zone, in the game. And the people that I've talked to consistently that have told me that they are burnt out, they do not have an activity or activities like that. And I, you know, in flow state for me, I also get the 3 M's when I'm seeing patients, when I'm doing surgery. It's an amazing, incredible feeling. But to actually get to that stage, you also need something outside of work that can balance you.
Yeah, you know, I always say that there's a, everybody needs a third place. Everybody has a home, they have work, but you need a third place where you feel comfortable at. And it's funny because I'll do the same thing. So when I go to the gym, I do a lot of CrossFit. So with that, I've always said, there's always something I'm working on that's always, outside of my comfort that I'm striving for. So it's that reach. And then, you know, you're throwing around some weights, or you're getting high up there. You got nothing else that's going on. And you have to concentrate on making yourself available. And then there's nothing else, because it's just that focus. And it, as you were talking, I was kind of thinking about like the med students. Do you find that like the constant beat down, you know, because part of the sequelae, I guess, of losing all that stuff or getting beaten down, or is that you're apathetic and you're just like,
yeah,
well, I don't give a shit about anything at this. I just want to get through. Well, because
that's a symptom of burnout. You know, like when you no longer care, when you're saying, hey, I don't care about what happens, you know, I'm just trying to get through my day. You get cynical. Yeah. You know, some people have a very self-deprecating humor, but you can always tell when you talk to someone, when they say things, you can be self-deprecatory in like in a confident way. But then you can also say things that make you think like, oh, I'm actually really questioning my own self-worth or how much I know. And I think you get a lot of that in med school, because the amount of knowledge you have to know to graduate from med school and then go into residency. I'm sure you had to do the same thing going through a chiropractic school. It's like drinking, you know, water through a fire hose. That's a very common saying that we have.
Yeah.
So because of that constant reminder, like, hey, like there's always more that you can learn. It's very hard to be the master of one thing. Even now as a spine surgeon, I've done residency, 5 years of residency. I did a year of fellowship. Now I'm attending. I'm still learning something new every day. So it's really, how do you actually get to a place where you're okay with uncertainty, and not only okay with it, but you can thrive in that environment. And I think that's what's really hard for others.
But you know what's interesting though, because it's bringing up, that's why I asked you about the med students, or the when you're beaten down. I remember the year before I was trying to get into chiropractic school.
Yeah.
Now, you're not going to believe this by looking at me, but I was not a stellar student prior to this. When I went back to school my second time, when I actually had an idea and I just didn't want to party and, follow girls around. But when I decided, I said, oh, I really want to do this. I put my big boy panties on and everything else. And I'm going, well, I'd bought my first house when I was 22. I think I was about 28 here. So I had a mortgage, a girlfriend, and then I was a process server. So I was up at 4:30 in the morning making friends by knocking on the door and giving them court documents. So I was the sunshine to everybody's day. But like I told you before, I was going to four schools at the same time.
Wow.
And it was based on where I was working. I would schedule whoever was going to get their summons and everything. But my day started about 4:30. I would wake up and then I would work a few hours, go to the first class. I'd have a couple of classes. I would go serve people at businesses or go to the office where I worked and did some office work. I would do that for a while, then go to night classes. If I didn't have night classes, then I would work and then come back, eat a little, do homework till midnight. And then weekends, everybody was home. So I worked 12, 14 hours a day on weekends. But as I look back, I remember that year was just crazy, but it was almost like I was in flow for a year.
Yeah.
And during that time, I was just having this discussion last week with somebody. I said, I don't remember like going, I was going towards the carrot the whole time. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to fail if I don't do this. It was like, I just have to do this. I didn't have time to think about like negative shit.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, I always lived by myself, so I didn't have anybody busting my chops. So I didn't have that negative feedback loop. I just worked and grinded.
Yeah.
But I remember coming back and like for the first 3 days after that, all that stuff, I think I slept. But it was interesting because I think I was on purpose. So I had that emotional drive that every day I was getting up and I was doing shit. Then it became a habit because I was, you know, I did that for more than 66 days and it no longer became like all this stuff. It just became, this is my life for right now.
Yeah. And that speaks to your work ethic. You know, you're able to kind of get through the tough part, even waking up at 4:30. A lot of people can't do that. Right. But if you have a purpose that's in mind or something that matters to you, that's how you can achieve your flow. And actually, you know, I want to bring this back to, you know, you're talking about earlier, this feeling that sometimes you just want to sit on the couch and watch TV, mm-hmm. you know? So actually a lot of these concepts too were concepts that I was struggling with. You know, I think when I was a medical student, one of my favorite things to do was just go on YouTube and watch, you know, basketball highlights. Sometimes if I really want to switch it up, I'd watch like freestyle rapping, just something that was completely different from whatever I was doing, right? That's, you can't think of it like a art form or something that's way different than studying for, you know, science than rapping, right? But the thing is that after I watched the YouTube video or after I watched the movie, whatever it was, and actually you may even have this experience when you were quarantined for 7 or 10 days. I don't know if you had gotten COVID or not, or had to be extensively quarantined, but like after a while, you just kind of run out of things to watch. After a while, that just sitting on the couch part, you can no longer take, even though it seems nice for a moment, it gets old after a while. And that's where languishing comes in. I think there's a lot of people who are in that state. And that's where the idea of active rest, of actually controlling what you do in those times when you have free time to re-energize you in the right way that's sustainable, I think that's where it can add the most value.
So define languishing for the people listening or watching right now.
Yeah, languishing is a state where you're not exactly burnt out, but you're not happy either. And your energy level is at a very, how should I put it? It's just enough to function, but it's not enough to sort of instigate excitement. And it's a state where, you know, it's okay for you to be in for long stretches of time. You might not even realize that you're in it, but you can feel that you're not happy or you're not energized. You just are.
You know, and, so that you've just defined meh. Meh.
Meh. Exactly. It's an academic term for meh. You know, it's like, you know, there's some things that you order at the restaurant, right? Like it could be your favorite dish. It could be your worst dish. This is just, you know, the bread is just good enough, right? The butter is just, you know, it's fine. It wasn't memorable.
It was, but you know, what's funny is that the languishing is, I'm going to talk to you before, is that when I started putting the mental aspect in with my treatment plans of the physical stuff and my proprioceptive and my diet and everything, because that was the most important, because I always go back to Thoreau's quote, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation, but they die with the song in their heart. And they don't even realize it because it happens so slowly. And I'm still seeing this post COVID where people got into their math or their languishing and they didn't realize it because, like you said, that you can only sit on the couch for so long before, you know, I've watched enough of, you know, Jeopardy reruns or Breaking Bad or whatever's out there. And you kind of want to get out and walk in the sunshine or, you know, whatever else. There has to be. It's purpose in life that gets you out of bed.
Exactly.
It's not to exchange oxygen for CO2 as many times as you can. And that's the whole thing. When I finally came around, because I'm like you, I'm enthralled with the body and I'm always learning something and I'm always freaking amazed about what this is capable of. But if you take everything that we do, it is only around there to carry the spirit in that meat suit about why you were born. And because if you can't turn your head because you've got that blown disc and you can't move your arm because it's blowing this out, or it's causing terrible migraines or this, or, you know, you're so overweight and out of shape that you can't even think about getting off the couch. That's not living. That's only surviving. But you find, because I'll get the people in, they'll say, I'll say, well, you know how you ever thought about exercising and doing whatever? Oh, it hurts so bad. And I'll bring up pictures of, you know, Super Bowl winners or running across the finish line. I said, these guys don't look sad to me. What are you experiencing? And it's because the meaning that the mind, then we get into mind, and it's no longer about brain, but it's about mind.
Yeah.
But it's also, everybody thinks that, like, they think exercise and they think pain, effort, sweat. And I say game, just like your basketball, dude.
Yeah.
It was like, exercise doesn't mean that you have to stick Lycra up your butt and do the sweat into the oldies. you can go play basketball and you can like body check that dude, you know, your buddy, to get him back for last week, which is fun in itself. But if you can't move your meat suit around, you can't help out at church, and you can't, you know, go to school and help this out or feed the homeless or whatever else is important to you. Gardening. Yeah.
Well, actually, gardening is great. So actually kind of build on what you said. I actually agree with you. I think it's the purpose that allows for you to, you know, find meaning in the activity that you do and make it not painful. And one of the things that the book, so Active Rest, is based on a book that Alex Pang wrote. He's like an author who did a lot of research on this. But it doesn't necessarily have to be going to gym, lifting weights, or, you know, doing CrossFit. You know, so Bill, I bet you're twice as fit as I am because of all your CrossFit activities. I can see those muscles bulging from out here.
I just cheat. The whole thing is just show up.
Yeah.
And I've designed some Instagram photos. You stand by the guy that lifts the good weight, so everybody out there thinks that you're lifting. Photoshop does wonder.
Yeah, sure. You know, Photoshop, all this stuff. You can edit it on Instagram. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that. Not everyone has to be like Bill, who's a champion, you know, CrossFit master. It's they actually, in the Active Rest book, they talked a lot about Nobel Prize winners and things that they did to allow their mind to roam free. And, you know, because Stephen Kotler also talks about this as, you know, flow triggers is another thing that can really activate, you know, your flow state. But it's part of that is curiosity, being able to think outside of your bubble. So if you are, you know, for instance, in my line of work, I'm a spine surgeon, so I can think about spine surgery. I can think about cervical disc herniation, lumbar disc herniation, sciatica, yada, yada. But sometimes in order to advance, in order to get to the next step of understanding, you have to take a field that's completely different from your work. Like, for instance, in this case, personal development or leadership, and see if you can make any connections with what you're currently doing with what other people in another discipline are doing. And a lot of times when you can make that connection, and you're in a situation when you can think about it. So a lot of these Nobel Prize winners, to get that state of curiosity, they would actually take walks in nature. So actually gardening, and that's why I kind of brought that up, was smiling when you said it.
Yeah.
Gardening is actually pretty good because you're out there in nature, you know, the sun shining on the plants are, you know, converting CO2 into O2. Like, there's a lot of people that love plants these days in terms of that's a way that you can collect. That could actually be one of your flow triggers to get you into flow state.
Well, the other thing, so there's a couple of things that you mentioned is, so one is, you know, that's a grounding effect.
Yeah.
So when your hands, and so for everybody listening or watching of it, so grounding is just in Japan, they call it forest baths. It's just you being in nature. And, you know, the hippies in us, they're going to say, because we're at one with nature, man. So like all the energy from the universe is guided through us. And it's absolutely true, and it works. So if you're a hippie, there's your answer. But if you like more of the science and the hard stuff, it's because the Earth is a giant magnet, and then it gives off negative ions. With our skin, there's a negative ion exchange, which is anti-inflammatory, parasympathetic, which means that it takes you down. And, you know, have you read this the studies that I think a 2 hour forced bath or grounding lowers the blood pressure and cortisol for like 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Better than medication just by getting out there. And when you're there, it is, it's just relaxing in itself. So anybody listening, you know, this is true. Cause if you've ever gone camping or been around a body of water for a day, you always wake up the next day early and refreshed.
Yeah.
And it's because you've been bathing in the wonderful earth or the magnets or however you want to take it. But the other thing that was interesting is when you were talking about that flow state where you just let your mind kind of rest and it just kind of runs in the background. I know that when I have something that I'm pondering that's percolating back there, you know, and you're pushing and pushing, I stop and I'll go and I'll clean the house and just dusting like that. And it's just sitting around there, and like a couple hours into it, it's like, ah, that. And I got that from Einstein.
Yeah.
When he was trying to figure out relativity, I can't pronounce it, but, and then I think he was working at the patent office, and it was just like a brainless job that was going on, but allowed his other faculties to run in the background. So it was very amazing, very amazing.
Yeah, and those are things that part of the skills that I want to be able to empower me and my co-authors, want to empower other students or trainees with, because that understanding that, hey, it's okay to do those kinds of activities. Not every activity has to be research, or not every activity has to lead to a publication that looks good on your CV. Actually, a lot of things that are in terms of what allows you to be a better person or just a more curious individual overall, those things will then lead you to do better at is whatever it is that you want to do. It's kind of like when, if you're cleaning, but you're actually thinking about an idea in the back of your mind, the more, if you just stop cleaning and just thought about it for 15 or 20 minutes, like maybe you get more and more frustrated. But if you just go to a different activity and let your mind kind of ruminate on that in a separate setting, then it's exciting, actually, the things that you can come up with. So hopefully like the idea of being able to enter a flow state and the activities that induce flow state, they don't have to be exercise. They could be like things like music or art. You know, if you like reading or poetry, you know, all those things that we did in school, maybe you were told not to be an English major in college, so you couldn't get into med school that way. Actually, being an English major is pretty darn cool. I was actually an East Asian Area Studies major in college. So I studied like Japanese politics. I studied Korean history, just things that are very outside of, you know, bio. I was also a bio major, but it was something else that took me outside of just the hard science, but allowed me to gain a different perspective on sort of the world that we're in. And it also made me feel a little bit less stressed about my next gen, you know, Gen Chem test or OChem test. You know, the world's a lot bigger than that. And so those are the things that we're hopefully are able to advocate and show students in our book.
Well, I think that's awesome what you're doing for the profession. And giving it back, because I think there's something that our professions can learn from. Because chiropractors are really good at interacting with people. We have a high personality practice. And, you know, that I think that's a survival mechanism, because we're such a new profession. But they had, I mean, some of the things that they had to do way back in the day was, yeah, I wouldn't do, but to get the attention, to actually get the biological science of what we were doing out, instead of it just looking like, you know, straight quackery. And on the same tone, that your profession tend to be more clinical, almost Asperger's. And if you come around and we can put the two together, I think it would be better for everybody, because nobody wants to go to any of their doctors or their healing that don't feel like they're engaged. And I've always said, because, you know, everybody waits for me to, you know, bag on medical news. And that's bullshit, because everybody goes in because they want to help people.
Right.
And they want to help people. And there's a different disciplines of how they learn and different philosophy. Do not come to my office if you have a blown disc and you're in, you can't think and you can't move. You get hit by lightning. You have a heart attack. Don't do that. That's my, not my jam. I work on chronic stuff that's working to maximize the body and get things moving. We can learn a lot from each other because the heart is there. And if we can keep the heart of the doctors beating fully cardiovascularly, but also keeping their purpose alive, we're better doctors. And I think it's amazing. I'm really glad to hear you kind of doing this book, bringing it back. I do have a question for you that's kind of been burning during this whole conversation is like, how did you do personally to avoid this? Or did you avoid this? Did you take your own medicine? Did you learn this as you were going along? Was it set in stone? How did you personally come across? Because you've done pretty good so far, boy.
Well, thank you. I'd say it's, I'm still learning, you know, this is not a complete picture or like a complete skill set. These are still things I'm, you know, trying to discover new things every day. And that's why I said that we're doing some research on flow state and burnout and looking at how that sort of correlates. But for me personally, I've always brought it back to other people. And I similar to what you were saying, Bill, like I came into medicine because I want to help people. So whenever I'm having a tough day, or, you know, I have like 20 notes to write, or I have a bunch of messages to respond to, the thing I try to invest the most in is the activity that I know restores my energy. So in work, what restores my energy is just talking to people. Instead of being worried about documenting or typing my note or making sure I like sign all my orders, I just sit down, I look someone in the eye and say, hey, how are you doing? Making that connection, that human connection, that could be with my patient, that could be with the, you know, the nurse on the floor that's taking care of my patient, a family member. Those are the interactions that I've always really enjoyed. And I've always came back to that when I was in, you know, med school, when I was in residency, because orthopedic residency, like we work 80 hours a week. Like I said, when we're on call, like sometimes our families don't see us for days. You know, we're in the hospital overnight. You don't get to see your loved ones. Like my fiance right now, some days she sees me like once or twice all week because I get home at like 10 or whatever it is. So the things that I try to do, again, is just focus on other people. But when it comes to other people, that interaction, how do you make those interactions all go well? That comes back to sort of the leadership skills. And if you're burnt out or even if you're languishing and you those things don't matter as much to you, you have to think about ways to get back to figuring out what's your purpose, what's your why.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. Well, dude, I'm going to respect your time, but I'm also going to put you on the spot. And we have a lot more to unpack. So I want to have you back and we can do a part two, because we talked about the need and what's going on. But I'd like to go over it in a little bit more detail about the, all right, we got what it is. So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And so we're going to like pin you down and get you back here. How's that?
Well, anytime, Bill. I'm around anytime. So happy to give a part two for this.
Well, that's awesome. All right, guys. So I want you guys share this. Share this with your doctor. Share this that there's help on the way. Anybody that you know that's going to med school or just anybody that's trying just to kind of work some stuff out. We talked about the clinical aspect of math. And if you're not really enjoying life right now, check it out. Listen to this again and check this out and really get deep, because there's help on the way. This is not a life to live. You don't get scores for how long you hang around. It's what you do while you're here. And whatever your why is, we want to make sure that we're there to increase your health so that we can allow you to make your dreams come true. This is Dr. Bill Janoschak for the Conquering Stress Podcast. We are peace and out.